I'm Matt Baum, and this is the Ministry of Hemp podcast, brought to you by ministryofhemp.com, America's leading advocate for hemp and hemp education. Hello again, it's Matt Baum. I'm your host for the Ministry of Hemp podcast, and still in quarantine, hopefully like you are as well. I listened to the last few shows we put out recently, and they started with sort of dire warnings. And in the face of a global pandemic, that's probably appropriate, but I want to lighten things up just a little bit to get this show going. That is not to say that everything is fine. Go out, get back to work, because life is good. We still need to hunker down a bit, and we still need to wear masks when we go to the grocery store, socially distance, etc. But there are some things we can be doing at home in the meantime, like cooking. My wife and I have been doing a ton of cooking and a little bit of cocktailing as well. And we've tried to incorporate hemp into that cooking and cocktailing. Back in episode 27 of the show, you might remember, I spoke to Hillary Kelsey of Humming Hemp, and she was nice enough to send me a bunch of hemp oil and some of their Humming Hemp Hearts, which are amazing on just about everything. In fact, just tonight, I made a cast iron roasted chicken quarter with tomato jam, and I served it over some fried rice and beans that I had the night before, sort of like a Latin rice and beans thing. And I topped it with some of their spicy hemp hearts and just threw it under the broiler for a minute or two to crisp everything up. It was wonderful. My wife has been making cocktails with CBD simple syrup from a company called Azuka. You may remember I interviewed their CEO, Ron Silver, back in episode 33. You can find all of these on our site. And of course, you can find them on Apple Podcasts and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. But the point is, it's not hard to incorporate CBD into your diet. And right now, we have an amazing recipe on the site for peanut butter cookies that are made with bacon fat infused with CBD. You could also infuse it with THC if that's your jam, whatever. They are incredible. We tried them this past weekend and oh my God, they are absolutely delicious. The recipe comes courtesy of Chef Sebastian Carosi, who hopefully I'm going to be talking to on this show real soon. I know I talk about it a lot, but I come from a food background and I love cooking with hemp and incorporating hemp into food, not just CBD, but hemp itself, because the flavor is so interesting. In fact, Humming Hemp's hemp oil has become my go-to topping for popcorn. It brings this nutty, almost salted sunflower taste to the popcorn that I cannot get enough of. The point is, quarantine, it can get boring, sure. But it doesn't have to be all isolation and doom and gloom. You can treat yourself, you can do some experiments, and you can do yourself a favor by introducing some CBD into your diet and easing your anxiety a little bit while you have a nice drink or even a great meal. Speaking of which, I would love to hear your ideas for introducing hemp into your diet. Give us a call at 402-819-4894. That is the Ministry of Hemp hotline, where you can leave a message and tell me, how are you cooking and cocktailing with hemp during your quarantine? I would love to hear from you. And real soon here, I know I promised it for a while, but Kit and I are going to be doing a Q&A show where we sit down and play your voicemails and talk about them. Kit is the editor-in-chief of ministryofhemp.com, by the way. I mentioned a lot, and I'm going to talk about him later in the show. But first, let's get to our conversation this week. This time I'm talking with Susan Trapp. She describes herself as the chief terpene officer for Terrapedia.com. Susan is amazing. She's probably one of the most intelligent people I have ever interviewed, and she is a riot. We had a lot of fun during this interview. She's just an incredible person. She worked on the Human Genome Project. Very soon she's going to be teaching accredited courses on terpenes, and she helped me with a serious pronunciation issue. You're going to hear me say the word terpene probably 100 times. The word is terpenes, and I'm never going to forget it now, and I'm glad she corrected me. I apologize in advance for how many times I mispronounced it. This is my conversation about terpenes with Susan Trapp. Welcome to the Ministry of Hemp Podcast. Thanks for joining me. I brought you here because you are kind of a terrapin nerd, from what I understand. And today, we are going to learn about terrapins. Because honestly, I've read some stuff online. I still don't totally get it. And I know our audience wants to know. So let's just start with, what is a terrapin?
Okay. All right. So terpenes are the largest class of natural products in plants.
Okay.
Okay. And also actually in nature. And so still the question is, what are terpenes, right? So terpenes, when you say largest class of natural products, right? So when I'm going to break this down.
Okay.
So natural products, right? When we talk about natural products in chemistry, we're talking about, for example, aspirin.
Sure.
Salicylic acid, right? That is a compound. That is a natural product that is derived from the willow bark of, the bark of a willow tree. And so these terpenes are essentially kind of, they are the same thing. There are these large class of compounds that are produced by plants for a variety of reasons.
So it's not just cannabis though? It's several different plants?
No. Yeah, it's all plants. That's the amazing thing about terpenes. And one of my missions with teaching about terpenes and teaching terpenes at some of these conferences, kind of general conferences, is to really explain and educate people that terpenes are this large class, and they're essentially in your herb cabinet.
Okay. What does that mean? So they're in my herb cabinet.
Terpenes are, I mean, so you've heard of the essential oils?
Sure.
Right? Have you, so for example, like lavender.
Yeah.
So lavender, you know, when you press the oil out of lavender, you get an essential oil.
Right.
That essential oil is a combination of terpenes, basil, rosemary, lavender, turmeric. These are, when you press those plants, right, and oil comes out, and those oils are primarily full of these compounds called terpenes.
Okay.
Right? And they differ. So essentially, it's a different formulation per, you know, herb. So, and so cannabis is really no surprise. And to continue to clarify. So in regards to, for example, lavender, which smells really nice, right? There are a number of essential oils or a number of terpenes within that essential oil of lavender.
Okay.
Right. Same thing. Basil. Basil has a certain smell.
Okay.
So it has a different combination of terpenes that are in basil.
So is the terpene directly related to the smell?
Yeah. So terpenes are what we call in chemistry, the volatile essential oils.
Okay.
So essentially what that means is they are aromatic. So they smell.
Right.
And our olfactory system, we have receptors for them.
Not volatile like they're going to explode, but volatile like...
Volatile and then that in that they're aromatic.
Gotcha. Okay. See, yeah. And now I was of the mindset that terpenes literally only existed in cannabis. But basically what you're saying is the terpene is what gives smell to just about any plant that has smell, like I assume flowers have terpenes.
Yes. And sometimes not good, but you
right.
know, it just depends on that combination of terpenes that are in there. And then there are other compounds, but primarily that essential oil is a combination of terpenes that are produced by the plant.
Okay. Now, what is the terpene itself? Is it like on an atomic level? Is it a part of the plant? I mean, is it?
Yeah. So terpenes, one of the reasons I have a number of power, you know, presentations that I give, and I wish I could show it because it's easier. I should have pulled it up.
Yeah, this is podcast world. Sorry, this is audio only.
I know. So I need to practice so I can come up with good examples.
Sure.
Because I teach this biology, so sometimes I get too technical. But the bottom line—
I'll stop you if you do. Don't worry.
Like, for example, a sugar molecule,
okay,
right, is a pretty simple molecule. And usually we call it a pentose ring or a hexose ring. So pentose being 5 carbons or 6 carbons,
right,
compounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've seen the picture of THC, right? You see
right.
these big cyclical compounds. Okay, so glucose or actually a sugar molecule without even getting into the details of which one are a pretty simple compound, right?
Right.
And so you can build like a sugar molecule and a sugar molecule, actually glucose, 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 glucose. And what you end up with is something like in biology, we would call that cellulose, a polymer. So a glucose, one sugar molecule is what we would call a monomer or one unit.
Right. And you connect a bunch and you've got cellulose.
A polymer.
Gotcha.
Right?
Okay.
So terpenes are somewhat the same. Not like that at all. But what I'm trying to get at is this is what we call a metabolic pathway.
Okay.
Right? So that's how they are produced.
Gotcha.
Right? So plants actually do produce sugar. And, you know, they use sunlight.
Right.
And,
that's part of the deal.
That's part of the deal. And so plants, what they do is they utilize what we would call substrates or building block molecules to produce polymers. It's a little not, I don't know, this part I should probably explain better. So we have these building, they're called isoprene units.
Okay.
And isoprene, that E-N-E, means double bond, and that's more than you need to know in chemistry. But this isoprene unit means there are five carbons.
Okay, and they're all bonded.
Yeah, well, typically an isoprene unit is not in a cyclic, it's a what we call a linear compound.
Right, it's like a line, but not they a circle.
Will, right, and I have a slide where I use Scrabble building blocks. So imagine one Scrabble, you know, A building block. So Scrabble A, an isoprene unit and another isoprene unit bind together, essentially, and you get what we call a monoterpene.
Okay.
So that's essentially two isoprene units, one C5 carbon compound and another C5 carbon.
And they
compound,
make one monoterpene, more or less.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the majority of terpenes of interest, and even the ones that really have nice smells, and this is a bit of an exaggeration, are monoterpenes. So the majority of terpenes, even in cannabis, for example, pinene, myrcene,
right,
which I'm sure you've heard of, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Those are monoterpenes.
And like the pinene gives things like the pine tree smell, and the myrcene gives stuff like the skunk smell, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So why? Why does a plant evolve to stink? What is the point?
Yeah, great question. All kinds of reasons.
It's a good stink. I like that stink, I should say.
Well, right. But think about it. Your plant. So the way I usually like to talk about terpenes is they're essentially, and when I do give public talks, I essentially consider them like the immune system of the plant. That's an easy way to explain it. But the bottom line is they're there to protect the plant from predators, right? But there are some terpenes that are considered phytohormones. So phyto means plant, so a plant hormone. During my postdoc, we studied bark beetle infestation of pine trees.
Right. Yeah. Right? They're awful.
And
like the ash borer.
Well, but it was fascinating because what happens is the pine tree, right? A bark beetle comes to the tree, and usually it's a tree that's already a little bit sickly, like, for example, a drought where there's not enough water, right? So the bark beetle comes to that tree, bores a hole.
Mm-hmm.
The tree itself has a response, and shockingly, those are terpenes. That's turpentine, resin.
Really?
Right? Those are actually diterpenes. So diterpenes would be, we can come back to that and you can piece it back together, but you have two building blocks, right? That makes a monoterpene. Three of those makes a sesquiterpene. Four of them makes a diterpene.
Okay. Woo. All right. And that's when you start getting into like thick, sappy defense type.
Yeah.
So turpentine, like which?
Turpentine. And turpentine historically. So, you know, again, these are part of my slides. Turpentine or turpentine was the first terpene identified, and essentially it was called turpentine because it was a German chemist who identified it.
Okay.
And that's where the name terpenes came from.
This is the same thing I'm thinking of, turpentine, to remove paint, right? Same stuff.
Yep.
Comes from a tree. From terpenes.
And I will continue to impress upon you, And this, like when I was in grad school and during my postdoc, I studied terpenes having nothing to do with the cannabis industry, which I can come back to and explain if you want. But the bottom line, almost at least back then, every paper that I wrote and practically every paper or book that I read that talked about terpenes, the first sentence was, terpenes are the largest class of natural products and plants. So again, if you're a natural product chemist or whatnot, you're studying terpenes, you're studying chlorophyll, there's all kinds of phytochemicals. And right now I'm blanking. But again, so, and the reason there's such a large class is because of what I explained to you. They are built on these like very simple isoprene unit building blocks.
Right.
And so you just, for your benefit, I don't know if you can see this, but isoprene units are here,
okay.
Right? Like these five carbon compounds. I'm going to knock over my coffee. And then you have monoterpenes and sesquiterpenes, diterpenes, sesquiterterpenes, which are, I didn't really study those. So I really only think about all the way up to diterpenes. So diterpenes is four like isoprene units. But my point is you go all the way up to here, triterpenes, when you get up to these upper ones, right? Cholesterol is part of that same pathway.
Cholesterol is a terpene?
Yeah, it's a type of, the precursor for cholesterol is from the same pathway. And what I'm trying to say, so if you were a budding biologist, right, or a budding organic chemist, you learn about these metabolic pathways. So you have a compound and then you have an enzyme, and an enzyme, what an enzyme does is it would take those two units and put them together,
okay.
Right? Then you have the basics of a monoterpene, but then you have another enzyme that comes and sits down and essentially will add on what we call a hydroxyl group or an OH group, right?
Okay.
And then that's how you might get, then you just kind of keep adding little, what we call functional groups on those terpenes. Then another enzyme comes along maybe, right? And it produces another, isoprene unit. So now you have three of them and that's how you make the sesquiterpene. So that's like a metabolic pathway. And so what blows people away, what I'm trying to say is in biology, it's one huge pathway.
Right.
That makes a polymer.
Is this
because when you get
so like when I think
polymers based on these unit of isoprene units?
Because when I think polymers, I'm thinking of like plastic polymers and stuff. But you're right. Saying that this has been happening for millions of years, basically in
yes.
nature with plants from the grass in your lawn to the pine tree in your front yard, all using mm-hmm. these same chemicals. For slightly different things, whether it is to keep a predator away or to heal a wound or to attract like a butterfly to pollinate it or something like that.
Exactly.
Why don't I know this? I mean, if this sounds like it is like the most, I was a chef for a while
cool,
and
honestly.
I cooked for a long time.
I can get really excited. there are a variety of polymers that are natural. So like, again, general chemistry, I teach this. This is like chapter 5 in general biology. There are four food groups, right? Carbohydrates,
right.
Protein, lipids, and actually DNA or nucleotides. Right. So a basic monomer of sugar and an amino acid is one. It's the beginning of a protein. It's the monomer
right.
of a protein. But what I'm trying to get at is, so when you have a protein, right, that's a polymer. That's a bunch of amino acids building blocks, one
sure.
right next to the other.
That's
and then you
technically
get this big,
a polymer.
That's technically a polymer.
I did
that's
not
what I'm
know this. Okay.
Yeah.
I did not know
yeah.
this. Now,
yeah.
why is it?
Same thing with sugars, right? So, you know, you have these basic fructose soup and I'm, you know, you're going to have to let me double check before you publish this because I'm getting, because there are disaccharides.
This
and
is
I get
not
fructose.
Going up for peer review. Don't worry.
Okay. Good. Okay. I know, but it's important to me. I got my PhD and, you know, I like to be accurate. All PhDs do.
So why is it that I never heard about any of this until I started learning about cannabis? How come cannabis people talk about terpenes more than anyone else. Cause like I was a chef. I worked with herbs all the time. We never talked about terpenes or oil. I mean, like essential oils, sure, because those do certain things and add smell and add flavor and whatnot. But there was no mention of terpenes until I started learning about the cannabis world. Why is the cannabis world so obsessed with this?
Well, because they have medicinal benefits, right? They essentially terpenes have been around forever, and they've been used in Chinese and Ayurvedic medicine.
Sure.
When I give some of these really introductory talks, I probably say over 20 times terpenes are, and it's terpenes.
Terpenes.
Like T-E-R.
Sorry.
Yeah, terpenes.
I keep saying terapene. It's terpene. Yeah. Sorry.
You're sort of talking the turtle peen or whatever. You know? A terrapin terpene.
Yeah.
It's terpenes. And then we also refer to them sometimes as terpenoids, and I'm not going to get into that, but you hear both terpenes and terpenoids, and it's just based on a little bit of difference in that compound of what's on it, which we don't have to get into. But, you know, once we are done with this podcast, you're like, you know, you have passed terpenes and cannabis 101 because, you know, you've heard of not only terpenes, but terpenoids, right? And the reason that they're becoming of interest, right, was first of all, everybody was all excited about THC and, you know, 30% THC, and we all wanted to get a little higher, right?
Sure, sure.
And then you discover, there's been terpene chemistry and cannabinoid chemistry, right, around for a while. The Israelis have been way far ahead of us for a long time. But nevertheless, then they discover that there are other cannabinoids that are related. And it's the same thing. They're related. So those cannabinoids are part of the same THC metabolic pathway.
Okay, real quick, let me ask a stupid question.
Yeah.
Cannabinoids and terpenes are completely different things, correct?
They are. They actually join.
That was going to sound really stupid for a minute.
They are, but actually, now that you know a little bit about metabolic pathways, right? There are two pathways that join up. It's called the hexanoate pathway, and then this isoprene pathway or isoprenoid pathway that we've just been talking about. These isoprenes, those two join, and actually, that is what makes up the cannabinoids.
Okay, so different,
you could be same, but different, or technically they are different, right? But, you know, they are two different. They start out with two separate substrates. They have a bunch of enzymes that do things to it. And at some point, a part of the isoprenoid pathway and a part of this other pathway join, right? And then you actually...
Then you have cannabinoids.
Yeah.
Okay, so you had said that there's medicinal aspects as we're learning about. Can you talk about that a little bit? Like, well, what are we learning about?
Yeah, sure. And they've been around forever. Like, for example, I know a little about Chinese herbal medicine, but I'm not a Chinese herbalist or acupuncturist who was trained in.
Neither am I.
But nevertheless, the point is if they are the largest class of natural products in plants, right? That means that they're all over these plants, whether it's a willow tree, turmeric or rosebud or whatever tea, right? Those all have these plant compounds that can be extracted and utilized. And that is when you get that beautiful rose smell, that's geraniol.
Right.
Right. The linalool has a bit of this lavender smell. Mm-hmm. Sage is from the same family, and it just has a slightly different terpene profile, right? And so therefore it smells a little bit like sage, but it also has linalool in it, right? And so they've been around for centuries. So traditional medicine has been utilizing them. They may not have known they were terpenes, but they've been utilizing them for a long time, right? And I guess I would argue that they knew what they were doing. Same thing with, like, again, your medicine cabinet: basil, parsley, turmeric, rosemary. All of those have these compounds in them, right? So
you touched on rosemary. Let me ask you real quick. Rosemary and pine trees have a very similar smell. Is that that same, what did you call it?
Pinene.
Pinene. It's the same terpene that's present in cannabis that smells like pine?
If you were doing a Venn diagram, right? They're, right. You know, they've got some that are the same and some that are different. That, you know, there's an overlap of a couple.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So most essential oils are a combination of anywhere between like, I don't know, 5 and 15 different terpenes in different, you know, concentrations. And that's what gives it their unique smell. Okay. And probably you could relate that back to like, that's in a way why, you know, the cannabis industry is growing the way it is, right? Because, you know, it's a plant. It's not a, it's not a mono drug. It's not a drug. It's not a mono pharmacy. It's polypharmacy. You've got all these beneficial compounds, you know, in this plant that you're eating. That's why eating, you know, raw and fresh food.
Eat
is
your
so
kale.
Important.
Eat your romaine lettuce. You know, like your dark greens, right? You know,
right. Because, you know, the dark greens have chlorophyll and pigments and terpenes and many other things in them. And if it's fresh, they're still active. And so then they help your body with lots of things. And you're taking those in and being able to utilize those little compounds as substrates for your body to do what it needs to do.
Okay, dumb question time. Are there any?
There's no such thing as dumb question. I'm really big on that.
Okay, ignorant question time. Are there plants out there that don't have terpenes?
That's a great question.
Or is it universal?
That's a great question. I don't know that for a fact, right? But I would guess probably not.
Right?
I think it's a great question.
From what you've described, it sounds like it is such a base part of the plant, as far as like they're all, you know, use photosynthesis and whatnot. And because of that, the chemistry is so basic that it kind of has to be there, right?
Yeah. I mean, and the interesting thing, so like I was in graduate school and it dates me. So I'm a long time ago.
2 years ago when you were in graduate school. Yes.
Right. 2 years ago. Cause I'm so well preserved. Yeah.
Again, this is radio. They can't see you. So I just feel like I talked to Susan Trapp, and let me tell you, she was gorgeous.
Right. But many years ago in grad school, when I was studying this, they also used to talk about the terpenes. They thought initially that they were the waste products of the plant. There was no purpose.
Really?
Yeah. And I think, you know, so, you know, as I continue to read and I, you know, by the time I was doing my postdoc, it was like, yeah, or at least that was one of the theories. I read that a lot. So they used to be considered essentially the waste product. And another way to talk about them is, so a plant or even ourselves, right? So you've heard of, essential minerals and vitamins, right? So we need those because we don't produce them.
Right.
Right.
That's why we eat this stuff.
Yeah. So kind of same, but different with a plant. So, you know, so there's such a thing as what we call primary metabolism. So the building blocks for the plant to make sugar, right? And then there's something called secondary metabolism. It's called secondary, which is where kind of natural products are talked about, because secondary meaning is secondary. It's not essential for life.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay, so
but it helps.
the plant is in theory not going like die if it doesn't have these compounds. And so they used to call it, well, they still call them, you know, secondary metabolism and or they used to just think like, well, I don't know what they're doing. They're like, they're just kind of there by accident because they're part of this pathway.
Right.
But it's turning out that that's really not the case.
We're like learning they do.
Yeah, you know. Cool evolution, Darwinian evolution. They've evolved for all kinds of things, right? The rose smells well, and I've, you know, this is great. I should come up with a good example, which I don't have for today, but like, you know, the hummingbird, right? You know, you know, is attracted to the neck, you know, I've got to find a good example of a smell, right? And it's attracted to that, and the plants producing it. So they've co-evolved together.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was halfway through the bark beetle infestation story. So the bark beetle infestation, what happens again is that the bark beetle bores a hole. The tree, if it's healthy, will like cover that bark beetle with this sap, mm-hmm. right? And then what's cool, and there's probably, well, there is more to it than just what I'm telling you, but this is like, I wrote a review paper on this a long time ago, but I think there's now more to the story. But so then the bark beetle says, apparently it produces a pheromone that's actually also a terpenoid.
The bug makes it?
The bug.
A terpene?
Yeah. It produces a pheromone that is actually a type of terpene, right?
Okay.
And it says, hey, bark beetles, come on over here. Like, come with me to get this tree. Let's bore some more holes. And so I like to explain this is that there's this very cool chemical warfare that goes on,
right?
You know, on whether that tree lives or die. And it really depends on how healthy that tree is and how many bark beetles get there, you know, and at some point that the tree is not able to produce enough sap or whatever to kill all the bark beetles, and then they kill the tree.
Okay. Weird question. Is the tree creating sap to stop the bug's terpene from calling out to other bugs?
Not the bug. No, I think that it's just a response, right?
So
that's just a response of the tree, to protect itself. So it's protecting itself.
So it's plugging a hole is what it's doing. It's not, I'm giving it a little too much brain power, I guess, maybe.
Right. That's just one example, and there's many. So,
but the bug is also making terrapins?
In that particular case, yes.
Okay. Do I make terrapins?
I was about to say no. I mean, getting back to this, where'd my chart go?
I can't help you with that.
Back to the very cool chart. Where is it? Let's see. Yeah. So when you get 6 isoprene units and you get to the point of triterpenes, precursors like cholesterol, lanisterol, like the steroids, squalene is kind of a precursor for a lot of hormones. So
we
you
kind
could say
of
that
do?
We do. Yeah.
This is blowing my mind. I'm here, honestly. I did not see this going where we have gone.
Right.
So, Susan, base understanding, I think, now that terpenes are all around us and not just in your weed and your hemp. But let me ask you from just a personal perspective, how does Susan Trapp get so interested in terpenes that she decides she's going to devote her whole life to it? How does that happen?
Yeah, that's a great question as well. All right. So I'm going to babble. So you stop me, but, way back when I was a wee last, right, I decided I wanted to go to graduate school.
Okay.
And actually prior to graduate school, I worked, now I'm just pitching for myself. I worked on the Human Genome Project actually.
Oh,
way
wow.
Back when.
That is amazing.
Yeah. 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 So which was pretty interesting. And so I decided I wanted to go to graduate school and get a PhD. And I had actually, my parents are both medical doctors, and I was always very anti-drug.
Okay.
And nope, so
nothing wrong with that. I should have been a little more anti-drug, I'll be honest.
anti-drug, not anti-drug. And, I mean, anti-drugs, if your parents are medical doctors, it's like, you know, you say you're sick, they're like, here, take an aspirin, here, take a Tylenol, you know, that kind of drug.
Oh,
right?
Gotcha.
Anti-pharmaceutical, gotcha. Not anti-drug. The bottom line is I was always very interested in natural medicine.
Okay.
Right. And so I go to graduate school and I was interested in molecular biology, and it was still kind of in the early days. And I stumbled upon, I got into a PhD program, which was biochemistry and molecular biology, biochemistry and chemistry. And, we actually didn't have that much molecular biology at that time. And so, I discovered, you have to pick yourself an advisor and pick a topic.
Sure.
And the person I chose was working on he was a natural product organic chemist. So this, you know what natural products are. And he was actually studying terpenes. And he was studying terpenes, fungal terpenes.
Of course, fungus does it too, of course.
Yeah, fungus does it too. So one of the more topical, and this will be of interest to the cannabis listeners. So what he was studying, there are these compounds, there are fungal terpenes that actually produce toxins, which are also terpenes.
Why wouldn't they be?
and one of those is actually, let's see, Fusarium, spore tracheoides. So Fusarium is a fungus that grows on plants. It usually grows above the Mason-Dixon line and the wheat crops. So, but yeah. Also cannabis.
Yeah.
So when people are testing like their cannabis for a variety of microbes, right? The testing or pesticides and microbes.
Sure.
One of the things they're testing is this Fusarium.
It's like a mold.
And they're testing
right?
Fusarium. Yeah, that's a fungus.
Okay.
Which produces this compound, which is a sesquiterpene. That's, you know, three isoprene units. Right?
God, yep, we learned all about it.
right. Called trichothecans.
Okay.
And they're pretty toxic. And the way I, you know, when I was first learning about this and the way I talk about it is below the Mason. So a lot of people, most people have not heard of Fusarium. They have not heard of trichothecans, but a lot of people have heard of Aspergillus,
yes.
Which is a fungus.
Yes.
That produces aflatoxins, which is not a terpene, as far as I know. I think I'm pretty sure it's not a terpene. I'll have to double check on that.
Okay.
But anyway, so below the Mason-Dixon line, Aspergillus will grow on peanuts. It's one of the most known potent carcinogens known to man. At least, again, this is I'm citing like my thesis and you know. 10 plus years.
Well, you're the guest. So yeah, blow your own horn. It's fine.
I'm blowing my own horn, but I kind of left the terpene field after graduate school and then I came back. And so there's a bit of a gap that I'm trying to catch up.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha.
But the bottom line is, so I was interested in that. I mean, the short story would be, I was interested in natural medicine and this guy was doing natural product medicine. And he actually had a genomics or a DNA project. And that's why I ended up working with him on terpenes. So he was an expert on these fungal terpenoids. And someone, a group of scientists out of Brazil contacted him because they had cows that were eating this plant, a different plant. It was called Baccharis megabotanica. And that plant was causing what they call mycotoxicosis. And so for those readers, you know, it's like, you know, plug your ears right now if you don't want to hear what like.
No, let's get gross. Let's do it.
It is really gross. I have a picture.
Oh, let's get into it. Let's get
PhD
into it.
Thesis, right, where you can just see the cow that has ingested this. They've just got blood coming out of all of their orifices.
So like it's just like cellular, just like falling apart, basically?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah. And so he came up with this grand, he always liked to, he used to come up with cool, grandiose hypotheses. That's what I loved about him. And that's Bruce Jarvis. And he's a genuine terpene expert. He's been studying terpenoids for 50 years. And so it's an old field as well, right? It's not even a new field. But anyway, so he wanted to prove that these genes, because at that time he thought they didn't think that these particular type of compounds, these trichothecan-like compounds, so a specific type of terpene, they shouldn't have been in plants. They were only fungal. And so he horizontal.
He was looking at it and saying, it doesn't make sense why the cows would get this, because this shouldn't be in the plant. Therefore, there has to be a fungus involved that is making this.
Right. Well, that, or that somehow the genes for those, there's such a thing as horizontal gene transfer, or the genes have jumped
from the fungus to the plant.
To the plant.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. So that happens.
Wow.
And there weren't that many cases of that way back when, but there's plenty of them now because now we've sequenced the human genome and you can actually study DNA and the sequences and really get into the nitty gritty of, you know, where those genes come from, kind of even like COVID-19.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Like, you know,
absolutely.
They've been studying, was it man-made or not? And, you know, genomicists and molecular biologists are very clever and they can do a good job of at least surmising with a lot of science, sound science, that probably that's not the case.
So it sounds to me like you are a hardcore nerd that loves to learn cool stuff. And the terpene.
I love molecular biology and I fell in love with DNA when I was an undergrad. And so in a way I found the perfect project in grad school because I was interested in natural medicine.
Right.
You know, anti-medical doctor because my parents were doctors. Sure, just anti, sure. Like, I'm not going to take drugs. I'm going to get it all from my
dad
food.
Was a salesman. That's why I'm in web hosting, you know?
So yeah, I don't. Right, right. But I had already been inundated with, I got to work for, and I am tooting my own horn. When I was a wee young lass, I worked for a guy named Dr. Craig Venter, who's quite famous now. He's famous for having sequenced the human genome.
Yeah.
He started
That's something.
he started a number of companies, you know, the synthetic genomics synthetic genomics. I think that's what they're called. I have to go look them up. Is in San Diego, but he started a number of companies. And so, right, I got to work on the Human Genome Project. I got to learn how to sequence early on. The generation before me, when you actually tried to sequence DNA, so understand each nucleotide in the DNA, they had to use radioactivity, and it was very laborious. I don't know. I was like that first generation that you got to just put it on a machine and fluorescently label the DNA.
And you see the lines, you line the black lines up and everything. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So let me ask you. Let that go.
To sum up, because we've done it, this has been crazy. But to sum up, if you had to pick one thing, what do you think is the coolest thing about terpenes?
Wow, what a great question. this is good practice. So that part, I guess you get to cut out.
It's going
to
come up. It's going to come up. Someone's going to ask you this.
Yeah, no, great question. I guess the coolest thing about them is that they really are, in a way, your medicine cabinet. And I think that's why they're getting so much play in the cannabis industry. I've studied them for a long time, but when I got into the cannabis industry and I started to educate other people and tried to explain it, just like I'm trying to explain it to you, to make these connections on terpenes and how they're part of nature and they're this huge, large class, which is pretty cool. And they've been around forever, right? And they're important in the perfume industry and the cosmetic industry and the commercial industry of cleaners and toothpaste, peppermint, spearmint, camphor, whatever. But they are this incredible a cabinet of medicine, and they're at our fingertips.
Susan, you have been amazing and you have completely blown my mind.
I have a website that's actually starting to look like a real website.
Oh, nice.
Terpedia.com.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I wanted to ask you about that. Tell me a little bit about Terpedia.com.
Terpedia. I have a mission statement ready.
Oh, hey. Nice.
We're starting to
getting real all of a sudden.
Yeah. Myself and my co-founder, what we envision is a world where cannabis enthusiasts, herbalists, and research professionals no longer have to suffer the lack of professional curated terpene content. So Terpedia enables viewers to benefit through valid sources, data, and literature that facilitates sound science. So really what we're trying to do is develop it's not quite a knowledge base, but so it's on its way to being an actually terpene knowledge base, or essentially terpene, an encyclopedia of terpenes in the modern world.
And we can go there now, terpedia.com. We can go there now. There's a site there.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We're building it, right?
Okay,
So the idea behind it is that, so a lot of people in the cannabis industry, they know something about cannabinoids. They don't know that much about terpenes. And what we're really trying to do is deliver, sound science and sound claims and appropriate dosing, right? And so what we really want to do is actually, so kind of phase one is get that information out and get the information that, the medicinal benefits that exist, and there aren't that many. So terpenes have been around forever, but they've been used for commercial purposes. So one thing I didn't get to say is after turpentine was discovered, they utilized type of terpenes to coat the bottom of naval boats, right? So it's an ancient industry. And then you've got these really floral terpenes, cosmetic industry or whatnot.
Right.
But we haven't really, and ancient medicine knows about them and uses them, right? But we really don't have that much medical scientific evidence on what they're doing and how they work. But
what I can
assure you of is that they're being overused. We all got high off to 20% THC, right? So, and then we bumped it up to 30. So right now everybody's like, let's throw in more terps. And, my hypothesis that I try to get across at my talks is more terpenes aren't necessarily better.
Right.
Sometimes they are. Probably the type. Usually they probably aren't.
Is more important than the amount, I would guess.
Well, they're found traditionally in very tiny amounts. You don't need much to get that floral smell. You don't need that much to kill a bark beetle's pretty small.
Right.
Right? So it's producing a pheromone. You don't need much for that tree to respond.
Yeah. That's amazing.
We probably don't either because we've all co-evolved together.
Right.
But that kind of data is, you know, not out there yet. And so that's what we're trying to do is build like a knowledge base where people can come to us. And if they have a product or a formulation, we will have the papers. We'll be able to find the science. We'll at least be able to like, you know, help provide them potentially formulations that work for, you know, pain, arthritis, the basics. But on top of it, if they want to throw this and that, and, you know, we're going to have that sound science behind it. And we're building it.
This sounds awesome. This sounds so cool.
Thank
Susan, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for joining us on the Ministry of Hemp. Thank you for roping and riding on the wild west of the terpene frontier right now.
Terpene.
Oh my God.
And then I want to hear you say terpenoid.
There you go. I'm going to put a rubber band around my wrist and I'll whip myself every time I say it wrong.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. This has really been
welcome.
Great.
You are so fun to talk to,
by the way. I would love to go to one of your talks. I mean,
really?
You're a riot.
All right.
This is great. Yeah, seriously. Thanks again to Susan for coming on the show. I'm sorry if some of that seemed a little hectic, but it was my fault, not so much hers. There was so much information that she was trying to impart, and I wanted to know all of it. And I'm really excited to see where Terrapedia.com goes. Of course, we will have a link to Terrapedia.com in the show notes for this episode. That brings us to the end of another exciting episode of the Ministry of Hemp podcast. My name is Matt Baum. I have been your host. Thank you for listening. And if you feel passionate about hemp and hemp education, I urge you to become a Ministry of Hemp insider by going to patreon.com/Ministry of Hemp and donating to our cause. Anything you can donate makes you an insider. It gets you all kinds of benefits, like podcast extras. We recently just posted one where I'm talking to Nick Waringer from Herb about how they come up with the names for their pre-rolled hemp flower joints. You can hear that interview with Nick in episode 36. It's a fun little extra. But like I said, if you dig what we're doing here, we could use your help. And it really does help. And any amount you give makes you a Ministry of Hemp insider. Please check it out. And if you have hemp questions, hit us up, 402-819-4894. Leave us a message. And like I said earlier, Kit O'Connell, the editor-in-chief of Ministry of Hemp, and myself will answer your questions on our Q&A shows that we do. And we've got one coming up really soon, I promise. I know I've been promising that a lot, but it is coming. If you're too shy to call, email me, matt@ministryofhemp.com. Shoot me your question and we'll read it and talk about it. You can follow Ministry of Hemp at /Ministry of Hemp or at Ministry of Hemp on all of your favorite social media platforms if you need more. And by the way, speaking of Kit O'Connell, head to ministryofhemp.com right now and you can meet Kit, our editor-in-chief, in a video that we just posted there. Kit is a fantastic writer and a badass hemp advocate. I'm proud to call him a friend and I'm happy to work with him. Check it out. It's a great video. Thanks again to everybody that has supported the show and donated and downloaded. It is your enthusiasm that keeps us spreading the good word and we ask that you do the same. Tell people about the show. Tell people about the site. Let's spread the good word of hemp and change the world, people. But for now, I got to get out of here. And I like to end the show by saying, remember to take care of yourself, take care of others, and make good decisions, will ya? This is Matt Baum, quarantined in Omaha, Nebraska, with the Ministry of Hemp, signing off.